Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's Stu Weber at StuWeb.com, and it is Thursday, January the 2nd, 2025, and I have the honor to have Professor Joe on with me. And what I want to do, I asked him to show with me on this subject because I was locked up with these people, very serious players. Now, when they had me as a political prisoner for 10 and a half months and dismissed the charges with prejudice, Judge Richard Mates did after being held because of a crooked judge, another one, in the beginning, for exposing my ex-father-in-law at Silverado, Neil Bush director, closed that down, calls them those hearings, the congressional investigation on HUD, and it's right there at the top of my website, my credentials, and when I was arrested, what they said about me. Anyway, I was locked up with these people, but before I got locked up with one of them, didn't even know he was a player in the game. And I'd caused that Denver International Airport scandal they never prosecuted. And a former mayor tried to bribe me with $7 million later, years later. But here's the deal. I was in jail with a guy named Bob Hunt. And he was Office of Naval Intelligence. He was a lieutenant commander. And he's the guy that captured Noriega. Now, he was put in Springfield, Missouri, where I was evaluating. They said there wasn't anything the matter with me. Shrinks down there for 12 weeks or whatever it was because of the games they were playing to hold me. And the shrink came and testified, and the whole bit, and the judge let me loose on the spot. Now, Bob Hunt was sent there because he wouldn't kill Noriega. Daddy Bush is on the phone with him, and he's telling him, he says, "You kill him, Bob. You get rid of him." He says, "We can't have him alive." He says, "Sir, I can't do that. The press is already here. They're covering everything." This is what Bob told me, walking the track. Out in the middle of the thing at 6 o'clock or 5 in the evening after they have dinner. They'll walk in a circle on a track. Anyway, Bob told me a lot of stories. But the one he told me was that he was there on the tarmac in France, meaning the airstrip. He was there when Daddy Bush flies over to pay the Iranian president, Bani Sadr, $70 million in cash to keep the hostages so Jimmy Carter would lose the election. This is about Jimmy Carter, in honor to him. Now, Bob was, he says, "If you don't kill him," he says, "I deal with you." Well, they threw him in Springfield. It took away his rank and threw him in Springfield for 6 months as punishment and no charges because he didn't follow the president's orders. Now, I was contacted by a gal that's CIA, she's a plant, Ray Allen Rusbacher. And she runs Rumor Mill News. She's a plant. She married Gunther Rusbacher. I mean, just suckered this guy in real quick in the whole nine yards. Well, Gunther got arrested, and Gunther was a CIA operative. He was a heavyweight. He was shipping fighter jets, Apache helicopters, M1 tanks and stuff out of St. Louis, Missouri. And plutonium, uranium, whatever they make at Rocky Flats Nuclear Arsenal in Denver. He moved that stuff in cranberry juice trucks because it gave off the same signals as radiation does, cranberries. Ocean Spray cranberry juice were honored to put the radiation that was missing, this 2,000 pounds of plutonium, I think it was, at Rocky Flats, missing. Suppose he spilled on the hillside. It wasn't. It was shipped to Apex Aviation, St. Louis, Missouri, which was an Israeli Mossad operation, and they were getting this plutonium and uranium and so forth, all illegally. Bush was selling it to them. Now, Gunther played a big role in that, but Gunther got arrested for something. They were shutting him down, trying to shut him down, and there's something else about this, is that the shipment of these weapons, if you look on the front of my website, I was locked up with an FBI agent down in Springfield, Missouri, who was the one that busted him. And the documents are right there, where he names Gunther Rusbacher in it, but by a different name. And he mentioned it and pointed it out to me. He thought I was a plant on him when I was in Springfield, and I wasn't, but we became friends. Now, this FBI agent, that documents up there on the site, but he was locked up because he busted Gunther Rusbacher's little operation he was running for Bush's. which is down there in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, he was heavyweight, so he contacts me. And the reason he did is because I exposed the Denver airport, and one of the things I exposed was the Tower Limited Partnerships. They kept calling them Tower 1, Tower 2, Tower 3. Well, this is Tower 64, and this is all the property that the new Denver airport was built on. Mike's father-in-law, Leonard Millman, and Larry Mizell, and Norman Brownstein, and everybody were all hooking up all these different stuff, and they would flip the land. And so it'd go up $1 million in 1 year, bare land. They were getting appraisals, the whole bit. They had it all fixed. So they did this for 5 years before the airport was even mentioned that it was going to be built. And so they had all these different land tracts. Happens to be that I get a phone call from Ray Allen Russbacher with Gunther in jail on the other line. She had a business line at the time, so she could do a three-way and hook us all up. Well, he's telling me who he was and that he had Tower 64 Limited Partnership, and to look up the record. So I did. I got the records on it. Sure enough, he was a part owner of it. And the one of the ways that they pay him is they give him ownership in something that makes some money. So that's how they con him back out of money. Well, he had, I don't know how much in the tower. I forgot what the amount was that he had indicated, but it was one, and I got it printed in the Denver Post or the Rocky Mount News, because I had Steve Wilmson with the Rocky Mount News pounding him, and or with the Denver Post, and he wrote the book Silverado, which is up on Amazon, and 8 out of 10 of those stories in there are ones I gave him that he printed in the paper. But he talked about a lot of different stuff, and I believe Gunther Russbacher is mentioned there, but he is mentioned in Defrauding America and the whole bit. It's Rodney Stitch covered him. I mean, that book also. But that was one of the players in October Surprise was Gunther Russbacher. He was a pilot, and him and Harry Rupp, who I came to know personally, never met Gunther personally, but talked to him. But Harry Rupp was Adolf Hitler's pilot at 17 years of age. He was so good. He had been flying since he was 9 years of age. Well, I met him through Super Spook Otis Johnson. He told me to get a hold of him because he was doing stuff for Millman. And they broke Aurora Bank because of him. And I'll get into that. They played a whole game on him. But he was one of the pilots, and so was Gunther Russbacher, that flew Daddy Bush over to Paris, France, landed on the airstrip. Out there on the tarmac, they had Bob Hunt, the Naval SEAL lieutenant commander, and his team protecting the vice president, or to be vice president. And they paid from, now you're going to like this one, it's called Valley Bank, Phoenix, Arizona, is where $70 million was taken out that day. And that's been a big money laundering operation for Denver for years. And they took that money out of Valley Bank and took cash over there and paid the Iranian president, Bani Sadr, to keep the hostages, to keep them until within 10 or 15 minutes after the inauguration. Then you can make the announcement that you're releasing the Iranian hostages under Carter. Now, what's interesting about that was a friend of mine. Now, this was my younger brother. It was a friend of his who was in the Marine Corps. He was a couple years younger than I am, or whatever, 4 years younger or something. Anyway, he had been in the Marine Corps, and he was over on a ship right there in the Persian Gulf at the time, sitting right there off of the coast of Iran, as a rescue mission was going to go down, which was a helicopter and an aircraft both, to pick up the hostages. And what the admiral that was running the ship did, I mean, they had mutiny on this friggin' ship over this. He intentionally took this helicopter and the aircraft in a dust storm over there, and intentionally had them both crash into each other. And I mean, they arrested him, whoever it was, who was in charge, second in charge of that ship, arrested him, and they were ordered to come back to America and empty the whole crowd off. And they did. Anyway, that was a friend of mine. Okay, my younger brother's good friend when they were growing up. He became a friend of mine. Now, he told me that's what happened. They intentionally did that so the rescue mission would be a total failure. Daddy Bush pays the Iranian president from Valley Bank the cash he took over there. Now, here's the kicker. Gunther Russbacher had also told me that he was the October Surprise pilot because they were talking with Ross Perot. presidential candidate, 1992. So here's Gunther and Rodney Stitch talking about this, but Gunther claimed to be the SR-71 pilot that flew Bush back from Paris, where he had landed, where Harry took him over and Gunther took him over, and landed and paid the Iranian president. Now, he gets on an SR-71. It was not Gunther Rosbacher. Gunther lied to Ross Perot, because Perot discussed it with me later, because it was somebody else, and Perot knew who it was, but he wouldn't even tell me. But because I had many, many talks with Ross Perot, and I'll tell you how I got hooked up was Rodney. Rodney Stitch, you should call him, Stu. He's interested in all this stuff about the financial frauds and all the other. So anyway, that's how I got hooked up with Perot. But I did talk to him clear up until the day before. He lost but he dropped out of the race. And the reason he did is because a friend of mine worked at Pennzoil headquarters, and he sees the fax come across in need of $3.5 million to do Operation Lockdown on Bush competition in Dallas, meaning Ross Perot. And who sent that fax? Gene Chip Tatum. I've had Gene on as recently as December the 6th. We did a show, Joe, with him this past year, or not 2024, 2023, I think it was. But Gene was supposed to do some more, but it came down with Agent Orange suddenly. He's in bad shape, I think, if you stole around. But Gene was a super spook. Gene was a helicopter pilot. And Gene came to me through Al Martin, which Al Martin, Margie Sloan with Time Magazine, or the book The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush, she's credited in there. I contributed to it, and so did Al Martin. But that's how I hooked up with Al Martin. And he was the Iran-Contra whistleblower in 1986, busted by Steven Dinnerstein, who I came to know and had many talks with before they murdered him and they poisoned him. There was only three biological chemicals ever known. These particular three were made by the U.S. government. He got hit with one of them that killed him. He was around for about a month and talked to me about a lot of stuff, but he worked at the Department of Defense, and he busted Al Martin. Now, after he got busted, there were, I think they said, 1,800 accountants that were underneath Al Martin, and suddenly 1,300 of them died of suicide, supposedly. Now, this is over Iran-Contra. MENA, Arkansas, with the Clintons, the Bushes, Silverado, where they laundered $12 trillion in 9 years, and an IRS agent got fired over investigating that. When I turned in 750 rewards, they call them, with the IRS, which they owe me a lot of money, and they don't pay you. They credit it against your tax account. Now, but this IRS agent investigated this truck driving school, because she says all of a sudden Silverado, they got millions of dollars and they only got 12 students there in Kansas City. Well, the guy was hauling drugs. J. Stevens, Stevens Truck Driving School, Stevens Inc., the one that ran into me the third time trying to wreck me and kill me out on the freeway in 2011, okay? Happens to be a second one running in the back of me working for Orion Investigations of Overland Park, Kansas. And I've got a police document that shows that they were on me clear back in 1990, I think it was. But here's the deal. Bush goes over and pays the Iranian president, Bonnie Sadar, $70 million withdrawn from Valley Bank, withdrawn. It's Gunther Rosbacher that I get to know was the pilot that flew Bush over there, along with Harry Ruff. Now, Gunther, I've already explained his involvement, Bob Hunt, capture Noriega, being punished, locked up with me. The FBI agent, forgot, John Cole, who's locked up with me. He's up on Sybil Edmonds' site, Federal Whistleblowers, but she won't put me up there because I never worked for the government. Only if you worked for the government, even though I'm classified. And it's right there on the front of my site. But Harry, I got to know him through Otis Johnson. Otis was running an operation. He was locked up in Denver in a cell with another guy. That guy had busted John Gotti and the Gotti family. Got him on drugs. So he was in protective custody. He was CIA, New York cop assigned to CIA, and he busted Gotti. Got him. Couldn't get him for murders and stuff, but boy, they got him for life for hauling drugs and all this other bullshit. And he was involved. Well, he was in the same cell with Otis Johnson. Otis Johnson, before his death in 2017, he was working directly for General Flynn, the head of National Security, the NSA. And he was working directly with him constantly, and he worked out of his home off of an NSA computer. I've seen it, because I've remodeled his house. But he was locked up in jail trying to bust the Louisiana governor, which he did, and then he was supposed to go and, you know, be released, you know, walk out the door. Well, instead, Bush, after he finds out that Otis is still running a Casey operation, William Casey was trying to bust a whole bunch of Bush shit that was going on. And William Casey, by the way, got killed. Bush came to his house with two big goons, held him down in his chair. He sticks a needle in his temple and causes him a cerebral hemorrhage. So he's laying over at Bethesda Naval Base and Hospital, and the floor guarded down below him and above him. And Otis went in there because he was his assistant. So he goes in there with the other assistant, the two top chiefs underneath William Casey. So he goes in there. This is before he was assigned over to the NSA. He was at the CIA and Air Force Intelligence before that. He was a super spook, true 007. He was. And believe me, he picked up a nuclear submarine with the Glomar Explorer out in the Pacific. I think it was 72 or 73, and they got the codes out of there. They got the nukes out. And this was a Russian sub, and he said we were sinking. We had to bring more floaters out to lift this sucker up. They hooked a big old cable around it and pulled it up and split it in half. And they got the nukes out there and the codes out there and the bodies and the whole bit. That's on the History Channel. And his face was on the History Channel. When I mentioned to him, after he told me the story, they turned around sixty days later. He said, go back and look at it. You won't see my face in there. And he wasn't. Now, that was Otis Johnson. Otis turned me on to Harry Rupp. And he told me after he got out of jail, and I was out of jail and the whole bit, because I had his son's number and was contacting him and the whole bit. Anyway, he says, you know, we became friends. I remodeled his house. I mean, the whole thing. It took me a year doing it myself. But anyway, here was the deal. Is that Otis turns me on to Harry. He says, you ever heard of Harry Rupp? I said, no. He says, he just got out of jail. And he got out of jail for supposedly the Roar Bank scandal. It's called Roar Bank scandal. And what it was Vince Barilla that owns the Denver Nuggets and was a goon for Millman. He financed him. Millman was the financier, him and Daddy Bush. But Vince Barilla, Norman Brownstein, Larry Mizell were the three main people that were robbing Aurora Bank, and they busted it. Took out too much in loans and busted the bank. But they blamed it on Harry Rupp, and the reason they blamed it on Harry was because Harry was melting down gold for him. He had like 12, 15 people going around to all the pawn shops and every place in several states and bringing the gold back, and they were buying the gold and with that drug money. Millman laundering it through Aurora. So here he is buying all this gold. But the other part of it was, once a week or once a month, he would take all this gold and he turned it to dust. He would take the gold bars and actually turn them to dust with some chemicals that they had figured out how to do it. And it looked like earth, shiny earth. And he would take these boxes, fill up his 707 aircraft, I think he said he flew. But he had diplomatic immunity, Harry did, and the whole bit. So he get over to France, or to the airport, or not France, but Switzerland, and he was bringing dirt in, swapping dirt. So he would bring dirt back, supposedly. But they didn't check his stuff at the airport because he had the diplomatic immunity. So they'd unload his airplane, take it over to the smelting plant, and he would turn it back to gold bars, and then they would transport it to the bank, the Swiss banks that they had, like three different ones. I forgot the names of them. But he told me his stories on this, what he did. And Otis had told me that. Well, that was towards the last when I was out in Denver living out there. And I talked to him a few times on the phone, but he's dead now. He had died. But Harry was Adolf Hitler's pilot at 17 years of age. He was 17 years of age. He was so good. He was the best pilot in the German Air Force. So Adolf Hitler wanted him as his personal pilot. He was there for 6 months. He said he was so fucking evil, Stu. He says, I couldn't stand it. He says, I defected. So he, you know, joins the OSS. OSS became the CIA after World War II. But Harry didn't become a legal citizen in the United States until 1963 in December after Kennedy got blown away by the Bush crowd. Okay. And then all of a sudden, these different scientists that came over, they're down in Hope, Arkansas, cloning people, still to this day, some of that Nazi stuff that they got. Anyway, that's where these clones are being made. Now, I got that confirmed with a guy with the newspaper. He used to do a whole bunch of stories with me. I forgot his name in the paper, but they were in Arkansas. But Harry got blamed for the Aurora Bank scandal, and so he decides, I've had enough. 18 months he sat in jail. So he sends George Herbert Walker Bush a letter. You know, I served you well, because he was his personal pilot. Even when he was president, he was flying him out to Area 51, what they call Area 51, but it's actually Groom Lake where the alien base is. And he would fly him out there and pull his jet in the mountain and the whole bit. He told me about it. Anyway, and he had Air Force fighter jets flying alongside of him. But Bush went in secret to different places. Harry was his pilot. So he gets out of jail. He wasn't his pilot anymore. But he took the hit on the deal. And the government said, you got to pay $10 million in restitution and all this back to the Treasury. Well, Harry didn't have any money, so he wasn't paying anything. Okay? His wife was a school teacher. And she walks in. I'm over at his house. And she walks in, or comes in the living room. And he had his desk at the end of the living room. And she had a couple couches, and they're facing each other. And she goes, oh, Stu, how are you? And she comes over and gives me a big hug. And I gave her a big hug. I forget her name. But she grabs me by my hand. And she says, come over and sit down next to me. And she's staring out the window. And I'm sitting on the couch, and Harry's to my left over here, you know. She's immediate left, and he's further left down the living room. And she says, do you know that this son of a bitch never told me he worked for the CIA? I looked over at him, and he nods his head, yeah. He never did, huh? She said, did you know? I said, yeah, I do know. So she says, what's pissing me off about this? He never told me. And she says, now they're confiscating my paycheck because of him as part of the restitution because we're married. So she says, I don't get a paycheck, and I'm close to retirement, about a year and a half, and I'm not getting my paycheck. She wasn't happy with it at all. Anyway, that was one of the things. But they got over it. I made a comment in that conversation that we had. She talked about other stuff. I said, your husband's quite famous, in case you didn't know. And I said, I forgot what I was getting ready to say, but I said, I don't think you have to worry about money. And he just looks at me and smiles like, yeah, Stu knows something. I got some money. Yeah. I said, you're being fed, aren't you? You got a place to live. I don't think I'd worry about the paycheck. You get Social Security eventually. But I said, your husband can take well care of you. And so, anyway, another thing about Harry was he had a driveway. And when you pull up on a circular driveway in the front of his house, he had his own farm, about, I don't know, 20 acres or 10 acres, something like that, out in Aurora. But when you pull up on there, the soil was shiny. It was like, you know, dirt and shining. I'm thinking, So Otis one time, he said, if you ever need anything, call me. So I buzzed him. He said, what do you need? I said, I need about $1,000, because I was in a hurt. And so anyway, I could call Otis and he would donate to me. Well, he says, listen, here's what I want you to do. He says, I don't have it right now. He says, I could have it in a couple, 3 days. I said, well, I need it now. He says, you know Harry. He says, go over and see Harry. He says, tell Harry I'll send it down to him. So I went over there. That's what happened. But he says, you ever seen Harry's driveway, Stu? Otis says this to me. I said, yeah, kind of funky looking. He says, yeah. He says, that's several million dollars right there in the ground. He melts it down and turns it to dust. And he was burying his retirement. So I'm over there, and I'm, you know, this was after, you know, his wife and I had the conversation. This is another time. So I go over there, Otis's request. I called Harry up. He says, yeah, come on over, Stu. I got it for you. So I get over there, but Otis says, one of the things I want you to do, Stu, he says, you know, Harry and our buddies, he says, I have his money in a couple of days. He said, that way you're out of the hurt. I said, okay, thank you. Anyway, I go over there, and Otis had told me to mention to him, say, well, you know, hey, you can just dig up a little bit of your driveway if you want to and pay me that way. And he looks at me kind of funny, like, what did Otis tell you? I said, nothing. You know, but he knew. So then I'm over there about 2 weeks later. Joe, you there?
Yeah.
I'm over there a couple of weeks later. And Otis had paid him and everything. And then when I got some money, I paid Otis back over a year, whatever it was. Anyway, I get over there and the driveway is blacktopped 2 weeks later. His whole driveway. He wanted to make sure nobody digging up anything out of his driveway. But that's the story of October Surprise. Jimmy Carter lost the election as a result of Daddy Bush stealing him. And Daddy Bush, the part with Ross Perot ties in because Gunther was one of the ones, and him and Roddy Stitch, who turned me on to Ross Perot. Now, I make my first call. And I'm talking with him, giving stuff about, you know, what I'd exposed to Silverado and closed him down and the Denver airport and stuff. And I'm hiding from the FBI. I'm hiding during the period of time. I found out about that warrant. I went into hiding. I stayed in hiding. And that was for, right at a year. When I found out, go home, and I see a Fed car out in front of my apartment. I went, what the is this all about? So, anyway. Hold on a second, Joe. I gotta drink a cup of coffee, or have a sip of coffee here. So anyway, I give Pearl, because I was causing chaos in the Denver news between Denver Post and Rocky Mountain News. Steve Wilson, Silverado. That's the name of his book, and the other one. They were doing stories, but they didn't know I was talking to each other. Steve thought he was exclusively getting my stuff, and so did Rebchick. Now, Ross Perot enters the scene because he is interested in financial stuff, according to Rodney Stitch. So, I end up calling him and talking with him and told him I was in hiding and what they had done, and they got a warrant for my arrest and the whole bit. Well, he took my stuff. He took stuff about HUD. He talked about the savings and loans collapsing everywhere. He talked about this. He laid out a lot of stuff. And he had stuff of his own he added to it. Because I saw him in, you know, different pictures they had on him on the news and so forth. Watching TV and so forth. But I talked to him. Well, then one day. Now, he's running against George Herbert Walker Bush for president. Ross Perot is. And he created that third independent party and the whole bit, which fell apart because it got infiltrated so heavy with trolls, government trolls. They call them FBI human resources. Now, a friend of mine, worked at Pennzoil headquarters in Houston, which was where Daddy Bush's partner, J. Hugh Leckie, runs. Who was also involved in the Kennedy murder. They both were involved directly in the murder of John F. Kennedy, the president, and Bobby Kennedy. And even a video, Robert Kennedy, it's out here, and I want to get it posted on my site, but it lays out, he knows the CIA murdered his uncle and murdered his dad, okay? Put it out there. I'm going to get it up on my site. Now, Gene Ship Tatum comes in because he sent a fax down to Pennzoil headquarters. It says, in need of $3.5 million to do Operation Lockdown, a Bush competition in Dallas. And meaning Ross Perot. They're gonna target him. Well, it turned out to be Gene Ship Tatum, super spook Gene Ship Tatum. Okay? He was involved. He was sent. Tatum was a helicopter pilot and invaded Grenada. He also was a helicopter pilot extracting people, and he was an assassin for the government, even. And he compromised the Coca-Cola chairman with a voodoo drug, and a little boy, and he thinks it's a girl, because a voodoo drug make him do anything, and he blackmailed him. And he's selling Coca-Cola, taking the DuPont land in Florida, accumulating it all in exchange for, you get this little piece of property down here in Central America where, you know, we've had a drug operation running for years. And he took it. He had no other choice. So that's he blackmailed him. He admitted to it. Now, if you punch in Gene Ship Tatum under Wikipedia and go CIA, I think it is, or Wikipedia Spooks, I think it is, or just punch it up there, and you can see Gene Ship Tatum on my breaking news column from last year. Show, I think it's still up there. I intentionally left it up. Now, Tatum and I became friends because of Al Martin turning him on to me. And we did a lot of radio programs and stuff in 1995 and pounded the hell out of them. And I mean, we stuck it to him. And then we created a network from 2010 to 2013. And we had to break it up because Jeb Bush, Tatum, ruined his election for governor. He stuck to Tatum Chronicles underneath the plates of all these donators that were coming there just before the election. And they all start reading what Jeb Bush was. Okay, drug dealer, guns and drugs with his daddy, the whole bit. Well, he lost the election. And him and I, Tatum and I, were doing on a radio show on a Sunday night, pounding the hell out of him, that could be heard all over Florida. It was 150,000-watt blaster in flat land like that. It could be heard from one end of the state to the other. And it was the most popular show on a talk show in Florida, Sunday nights for 3 hours. Well, we brought a lot of people up there. Darlene Novinger went on, former FBI. She's up on my YouTube channel. If you go to my website and look at videos, or it says videos, you'll hear Tatum, an audio of him in 97, I think it was, or 96, an audio of him. And you'll hear a video of an audio of Darlene Novinger. Well, we were putting people like that on because she was aware of it, of the drugs with Jeb Bush. She was an FBI operative that came to her. But anyway, it's some of the stuff that people I've been hooked up with. But I got hooked up because of that fax going to Pennzoil headquarters. So I gave it to Ross Perot. I took it over and saw to it that I was in Houston, but I saw to it that it got faxed to him. I did it. So he gets the document. Next day, he resigns from the election. I call him up. I said, Ross, what's the deal? He says, Stu, he says, that's really a heavy document. He says, I'm into it. And I'll get back with you. He says, when I find out what the hell really is going on. I said, okay. Well, Gene Ship Tatum was released in 95, now, from jail. But this was in 1992 election. Anyway, I called him up one day and talked to him on other occasions, but he makes an announcement. Now, this was in May. He resigns out of the election, and he comes back up in September. So I said, oh, man, I'm going to call him up. I said, Ross, he says, Stu, how you doing? I said, okay. I said, what's this about you getting back in election? You really think you're going to win the presidency? He goes, no, that's not what I'm doing. He said, what I'm doing is pulling enough votes off of Bush that he's going to lose the election. He said, that's what I want to do. He says, the Clintons will then win. I said, well, they're all involved by rank counter. He says, yeah, I know. But he says, the thing is, he says, Al Gore's not dirty and he'll become president when I get through with him. That's what Ross Perot's intention was. So he was going to let Clintons get in and they'd be burned for their mean Arkansas drugs and guns. And Al, or, and he says, at least, he says, Al Gore, he says, isn't dirty. He says, like the others are. He says, and something along that line. I forgot what else he said. But anyway, so that was what he thought he was going to do. Well, then Ronald Reagan gets shot. After Bush gets into office, after doing October surprise and stealing the election, if you remember when they're being sworn in as president, vice president, what's being said on the news? That they, right after there, 15 minutes, 20 minutes later, the Iranians have are agreed to release the hostages. So this is the game that they did. And so, anyway, here they're in office. Then what happens? Reagan gets shot. Who did Reagan get shot by? Hinckley. Where was Hinckley's dad when Hinckley was shooting the president, Ronald Reagan? Hinckley's dad was having lunch with George Herbert Walker Bush at the vice president's office or wherever it was on that day. What happened that evening? Neil Bush, the president's son that laundered the drug money for Ep Milman's Silverado, Mike's father-in-law's. Anyway, they Neil Bush had a birthday party that night, and John Hinckley, who shot Reagan's brother, attended that birthday party of Neil Bush's that night. So you've got this mind control, fuck. In my opinion, the Hinckley kid, mind control, probably drugged. Who knows what they did to him? Could have been cloned. But you got Daddy Bush playing this game. And it was always him. And they stole Carter's election as a result. And an admiral got locked up over the crap. And, let's see, there was something else on this deal. Was, Pearl. After Reagan got shot, Reagan thought it was the CIA, like he knew that they murdered Kennedy and shit. So he figures that that's who it was. So he takes Ross Perot, because Ross Perot graduated from the Office of Naval Academy, and he never served in the military. He served in Naval Intelligence instead, like the CIA, that part of it. And he was a master at software, designing software for our missiles. All of our missiles and other stuff, it comes from his software company down there in Dallas. I know this. Now, he's brilliant at it. Was. He's dead now. He died, what, a year or two ago? A couple years ago, I think. But Ross was assigned by Reagan at the be in the CIA, work in there to find out who it was that murdered him, or tried to murder him, along with six other guys. There were six of them total, five plus Ross Perot. These were people that Reagan trusted. So he assigned them. Well, they all went on their different ways and worked together and so forth, and they found out, wow, you know, he's doing all this nasty shit. Bush. And, yeah, look, it goes back to Stu Webb's father-in-law. Well, so he set up this operation. He called it M&L Business Machines. So he got funded to run the operation. They went and bought this business machines company in Denver, Colorado. It's called Morgan Levine Business Machines Company. And they had boxes of word processors and, you know, first typewriter type processors before they had real computers and the whole bit, or they were too expensive, but they were selling machines and copy machines and everything else. So Morgan Levine, it was a way that they could operate, and it was a guy named Robert Joseph. And he was the president of the company. And they're out of Chicago, and they got, you know, a nice financial statement and all this other, and this is a CIA operation run by Ross Perot, targeting my ex-father-in-law and targeting Bush money, Neil Bush, and the whole bit. So, and all the briberies that they did of all these public officials that they found out from that Reagan shooting from that year forward, and it was an operation clear until 1997. They ran. And they found out, and here's what they did. They go into Denver. This is the good guys at the CIA that are targeting Milman and targeting different ones. They were the ones that busted John Gotti, that Otis was in jail with, in the same cell with the guy that actually busted him. He was part of the operation. But Ross Perot's operation was targeting through M&L Business Machines. First thing was Norman Brownstein, to get hooked up with Daddy Bush's former CIA counsel when he was CIA director, okay? He was the counsel to him. He was Milman, got him out of law school in 1972 and put him as his attorney till 75, and then he came back and he serves as his attorney still to today, but Milman's dead. Mizell inherited the fallen angel. It's in him, and that gets into a whole other story, but Norman Brownstein all of a sudden gets a call from Robert Joseph, and he wants to have a meeting with him. So he goes in. He tells him what he's doing. He says, I'm buying this Morgan Levine, and we're going to change the name to M&L Business Machines. Can you do that for me? Oh, yeah. And he charged him so much money. He paid him. He got his corporation all fixed up, and the sale of the business from Morgan Levine to him, or to the CIA front company, M&L. And so the first thing they do is, you know, they get rid of the machines. They start giving them to the government in empty boxes. They fill them with dirt bags. Make it feel like they come in and start to push one. They can't move the box, empty box. So it looks like they're really doing a business. Well, the other part of the business was the vice president of the company, I forgot his name, he was a shrink. He was a psychologist. Like, I got a daughter, MD. She's a psychiatrist. The psychologist is just one level below the one that can issue medications, the PH or the MD. But he was a psychologist. And so they go in to target the family members of Larry Mizell's wife. I think her name's Sue Mizell or something. They target Leonard Milman's wife, my ex-witch doctor, ex-mother-in-law, supposedly, Elaine. They target her, and they target Norman Brownstein's wife and his law firm, different partners. They target them. Well, how they target them is it shrinks, sets up Boulder. M&L's down in Denver, and he's got, you know, business going. He sends out letters. Oh, I'm a new practitioner here, or whatever it is. And if you have any of these problems, and he lists things that they knew that these women suffer from, being married to these evil bastards. And they are just about as evil. But the point is, they target him. Well, Sue Mizell, she's in a Rolls Royce, and she's flying up there, and she's got a set of sunglasses on, and the whole bit. I heard the story first time. And she comes to visit him. She's got an appointment with the doctor. And so, part of M&L. Well, he's got two rooms. He's got a reception room. He's got an office that he counsels them in back office. So she comes up here, and she's out. He says, I'll be with you in about 15 minutes, you know. She was a little bit earlier or whatever, but she shows up, and she's sitting at a table or, you know, the couch, and she's got a table in front of her. It's got all these brochures. If you're in need of a foreign trust, contact M&L. If you're in need of a foreign bank account, contact M&L. If you need a foreign corporation, etc., contact M&L. And so all of a sudden, she'd say, oh, my husband's into this stuff. He's into these trusts and all this stuff. You mind if I take a couple of pamphlets? No, go ahead here, take several of them. So he gives him pamphlets. She goes home. All of a sudden, Robert Joseph gets a phone call running M&L about 3 days later, and Norman Brownstein wants to have a meeting with him. So they meet. Mizell's there, Brownstein's there, and they're questioning, well, what are you into? He says, oh, well, you know, I have foreign bank accounts, so we have it, so on and so forth. So they tested him, the money launder for him. So here's Ross Perot's sting operation, now laundering money for Leonard Milman, my ex-father-in-law, who died in 2004, and Larry Mizell, that was his number one chief that ran Silverado and so on and so forth. And he, the fallen angel that possessed Milman, when Milman died, Mizell was the chosen one. They call him the 12 disciples of Satan, the 12 richest on the planet. Now, so that jumped into Mizell, because Otis called me and said, well, Leonard's dead. I said, no shit. He goes, yeah. I said, that'll help. He said, no, it's not. He says, whatever lived in your ex-father-in-law lived for thousands of years before it inhabited him. And he says, now it's inhabiting Larry Mizell, and he doesn't like you. You've put too much heat on him. Now, back to Ross Brofer for a moment, the story. M&L infiltrates him, laundered money for him, and the whole bit. Even laundered Mayor Federico Pena's bribe, part of his bribe for him, and the whole bit. Well, then Ross Perot says, okay, we got enough evidence on him and the whole bit. We got a grand jury, 1997. They bring Millman before the grand jury. He has to pay an $80 million fine. He never goes to jail. Larry Mizell paid a $10 million fine and never went to jail. Norman Brownstein, the two attorneys Millman hired, one wanted to build apartments, so he got them all the HUD that he wanted, and that's the largest developer of single family. I'll think of the guy's name, but it was part of the HUD scandal. But it led all back to them. They had 500,000 apartment units in the United States back then. That was in 89. Now, here you are in 1997, and I hear the grand jury is going to happen, and I'm invited to the grand jury. So I go over to the federal building where the grand jury's happening to give my testimony, because I was locked up with Robert Joseph, and he admitted to me what they were doing. And he gave me copies each evening of different bank accounts of M&Ls and so forth, of who's when and where and what and when, including the Mayor Federico Pena and all these other people that they were paying bribes to from M&L. They were laundering the money there and paying them the bribes, but for Millman and gang, and they were stinging them. They had them nailed. So I go to the grand jury room, and two FBI agents then said, Webb Lee. He'd called me by my name. One of them I recognized, you know, I'd seen him before. So, leave. I said, I'm invited in here. No, you're not. If you don't leave, we're going to arrest you, and you're going to spend a lot longer in jail this time. I thought, fuck you. They said, get off the property or we're going to arrest you. So I had no choice but to leave the property. And they followed me clear across the parking lot from the federal building and watched me get my car and leave. They were that pissed. They didn't want me around there. Well, here's what happened. I'm talking to the people that was a PI that was involved in it in Denver, who invited me, and I called him next day, or called him later. He says, yeah, Stu, he says, something's going on. So what ends up happening is Kaufman, the U.S. attorney out of Washington that was prosecuting this thing for Ross Perot's sting operation, what he did, the key was Mayor Federico Pena, who had been mayor of Denver when I was causing the scandal on the airport, he took a bribe from Phil Wynn. He was the convicted HUD figure that I got convicted. He was supposed to spend 6 years in jail. He never spent a damn day. The judge sealed his case for 12 years, and Clinton's, before they left office, gave him a presidential pardon. He never spent a day in jail, paid $1.5 million fine. He served on the board of directors of MDC Holdings. Phil Wynn paid Mayor Federico Pena a $2.5 million bribe. Okay? So they knew that. They had him. So Mayor Federico Pena had to resign, and he stood. He said, oh, I'm resigning. They moved him up from mayor to Secretary of Transportation, then the Secretary of Department of Energy, and he resigned as Secretary of Department of Energy. He said, oh, I'm resigning because of family. My wife and I, we need to be closer. He was a faggot, and she was a dyke, and they told him to get married to make it look like, you know, they weren't strange. Here was the other part. Is that Phil Wynn paid the bribe to him. Oh, M&L had, they had all this evidence on all this shit. So Millman pays an $80 million fine. I'm standing at the grand jury door, can't get in. Calling the next day, find out what happened. Okay, tried to get home that late afternoon, couldn't do it. I remember it's the next day. And Mizell paid $10 million. Brownstein paid $10 million in fines. Mayor Federico Pena had to pay a $1 million. He spent $1.5 million of $2.5 million bribe, so he only had $1 million left. So they fined him $1 million. He got to keep the other part of the bribe. Never spent any time in jail for voting on the Denver airport that Phil Wynn had bribed him with the money. So here's, you got this whole thing with Perot, nailing him down. They found They found 450 FBI agents, DEA agents, IRS agents, different agencies, different people of different agencies, congressmen, senators, local, state, federal level of each state. They had 450 people who had been bribed, and Immanuel had all the evidence on it. And Kaufman, the U.S. attorney, was prosecuting it out of D.C., and this was down in Denver. She sealed it under, or she only fined Milman, Mizell, Brownstein, and Frederico Pena. That was it. And Clinton sealed the case under national security immediately, the whole thing. So none of the bribes could be brought out about who took what, when, and where, and how. And that could all be unsealed under national security with Trump's signature. And it would burn one hell of a lot of these government officials that are probably still in power. Now, I don't like what is going on. I mean, I don't like it at all. And Jimmy Carter, I came on here and asked if you'd do this with me, and I've been doing all the talking, but Jimmy Carter, if he hadn't been interfered with by the admiral over in the Persian Gulf that intentionally crashed those two crafts together because Bush took the money over to Bani Sadr and paid him in France, and I have, at the time, here with Gunther Rosbacher, Harry Rupp, Bob Hunt, Office of Naval Intelligence, guarding, so Bush could be back from Paris, and they would never say, oh, SR-71 moves. He couldn't have taken his private jet and flown that fast. It would be at a meeting in New York where he had to be that night. Okay. Anyway, that's October surprise. Jimmy Carter got screwed. Bush overthrew the election, and Ross Perot turned around and burned him for me. He burned him on that end. $80 million Milman had to pay. He sold a building on Colorado Boulevard, or whatever it's called, down there near university, that they sold to a drug dealer that Al Martin mentions in his book. The Conspirators, where Milman's mentioned in his book. Great read. It's called The Conspirators. Anyway, Joel, I think I've said it pretty much, haven't I?
Well, sounds like you've covered all the bases that you would like to cover on this story.
Yeah. Now, what do we got going on right now that you're aware of that everybody should hear on something that maybe you want to add to it?
No, not really. There's always more to the story than meets the eye that just doesn't get into the press.
No, it doesn't. The press has been really screwed up. Now, one of the presses you used to read a lot was Contact Newspaper. Now, there were quite a few stories in there by Gunther Rosbacher, weren't there?
Well, let me tell the people how you met Gunther. How did you get introduced to Gunther?
I got introduced to him by phone. He called me up. He called Steve Wilmson up with the Denver Post, and he says, "Stu, this is out of my league. You talk to the guy." I said, "Okay." So I called up Ray Allen Rosbacher, the number he had, and she's the one that's the plant, runs Rumor Mill News. She's a plant. She was a plant on Gunther and got him arrested. He knows it. He divorced her, married to her for a short period of time. But Gunther called me, or I called her up, and then I hear back later when he's calling from the prison, calling her up, she's got a three-way phone, ground line. So she hooks me up. So that's the first time I talked to Gunther Rosbacher. Was over the Tower 64 limited partnership that they sold him part of the partnership because he was making so much money. They would have him invest different CI guys. That way you make some money while we commit this fraud. But that's how I met Gunther. He was locked up in jail.
Now, you mentioned the Denver Post. Now, how did you get yourself in the building of Denver Post to receive this call?
Oh, I wasn't. I was at home in Independence, or wherever I lived, here in Kansas City, probably Overland Park at the time.
So what was the reason that Gunther was referred to you?
because he was seeing these stories by Steve Wilmson that was writing them for me. He was writing 1 to 2 stories a week about the Denver airport and the different fraud going on in Silverado and so forth. And so he reached out to me, reached out to Steve, and Steve did not deal with him. He's saying the CIA is part of this tower and tied to your ex-father-in-law. He says, I don't want to deal with it, that part of it. He says, you check into it. I said, okay. So I did. And it turned out to be legit. That's how I met Gunther by phone. Had talked to him a couple, 3, 4 times. But he talked to Ross Perot and Rodney Stitch, claiming to be the October surprise pilots stealing Jimmy Carter's election and the whole bit. And so Ross Perot had interest in that. But Ross says, I've checked into it. He wasn't the SR-71 pilot's dude. How does he know all this stuff? And I, you know, when I talked to Perot, and I told him because, of, you know, who he was, and all of it because of shipments and stuff. And then I get, you know, I'm hiding from the FBI or getting locked up. What? I'm hiding from the FBI while I'm talking to Ross Perot. And he starts an operation a year later or something, whatever it was, when Reagan got shot. What was it? About 2-3 months into power, Reagan gets shot by Bush's crowd. Hinckley?
Yep, except that Hinckley didn't shoot Reagan.
Interesting.
Although the bullet that he shot wounded Brady. But the real assassin was in this above level spot, and it was a special air gun that shot a very sliver of lead. And it went so perfectly, it got within less than a 16th of an inch. Would have gone past that, it would have punched the heart. That's why the only reason that he survived was that the projectile did not project itself all the way into the heart. That the real shooter was from above, not at street level.
You know, and it was Jehu Licky. Pennzoil, I mentioned in the program, it was him that pushed Ronald Reagan to make Daddy Bush his vice president candidate. He had that much influence. Now,
yeah.
Why is that? Reagan was the Actors Guild. He was the president of the Actors Guild. What does the Actors Guild have in Hollywood? At their headquarters, the Actors Guild, a special vault. So when the actresses or actors come to the headquarters, that's where they buy their drugs. They buy their drugs from there. Because the Colombian drug dealer, what was his name? Escobar. Pablo Escobar. His cousin was in jail with me in Denver because they were investigating supposedly why he had money at Silverado and the whole bit. Now, he tells me this after I get back from Springfield. And he says, Stu, he says, I never told you who I am. He says, you ever heard of Pablo Escobar? I said, yeah. I said, and a drug dealer or something in Colombia? He said, yeah, it's my cousin. I said, no kidding. I said, what are you in jail for? He says, I was hauling the drugs through the Panama Canal over. And he says, that supply Daddy Bush and the CIA, their drugs in San Francisco. And to the Actors Guild, he said, we'd go to Hollywood and dump them off down there and take them in there. And he said, then make our next route. And he's telling me the story. And I verified through Otis later. He says, yeah, that's who was locked up in there with you. He says, I saw everybody, you know, who it was, because he was supposedly under protected custody, working an operation for Casey to bust that Louisiana governor back then. And so anyway, Escobar, another interesting story about Escobar, he was telling me this. And he says, yeah, he says, Ronald Reagan, he was the Actors Guild president, and they know what's going on with the Actors Guild. Drug house. So the actors and actresses don't get caught on the streets trying to buy drugs. Now, another thing that confirmed this was here's Gene Chip Tatum, Mr. Assassin for the Bush Crime Syndicate, should we say, for the government, CIA, etc. He went through Biloxi, Mississippi, the same place my father was a spook, Air Force Intelligence. That's where he operated out of. But Gene Chip Tatum was the one that killed Pablo Escobar. And when he told me that, I said, oh, shit. And he sent me a picture of it. He had murdered him for the bushes. They had him laying in, his body's laying on the side of a hole they dug for him, to cover him upstairs. It's up on my website. But I just thought I'd mention it.
Well, Stu, I think you've covered a lot here, and I think we got to bring to a close.
Okay, okay. Is there any special news you want to report on? Anything that's going on in the planet? Okay. Joel?
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you for sitting in with me.
All right.
Okay, buddy. We'll talk. I'll have this up here in about an hour or so.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.